This is the October 6th edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Sue Martin of Ag and Investment Services. She's in Clarion, Iowa. And Alan Brugler is here from Brugler Marketing and Management in Omaha, Nebraska. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. We've been on the air for 100 years, serving the agricultural audience since April of 1922. You can find us online today if you'd like and listen to us as a podcast too at willag.org, willag.org, or just search out Commodity Week or the Closing Market Report for that matter in your favorite podcast application. Sue Martin, Alan Brugler, it's great to have you with us today. Alan, I think I'll start by getting a list of a few items from you and then Sue that we should discuss for the day. What's on your mind?
Well, I think we've got to talk about the USDA reports that are coming out next Wednesday, and we've got to talk about the balancing act we're doing here between recession and the macro investing and also these fundamentals. The trade's looking at Brazil with a big crop coming on potentially, and what's going on with the biofuels and palm oil. So I've got a lot on my soybean list today.
Sue Martin of Ag and Investment Services, on your mind?
Well, I certainly think I have to agree. I do think with Ellen that the report coming up here next week is a very important one, and especially in the corn numbers. So that would probably be one of the things. And then maybe the global outlook, including what's going on in China.
Let's begin by getting a view of what's happening in your area this week on the 6th day of October. Sue Martin, have farmers been in the field much around Clarion?
Very much so. The big surprise has been we've been in a very dry area, so to speak. Maybe not as dry as dry land corn and beans in Nebraska, but we're in a fairly dry area. And the surprise has been the bean yields. Not a lot of corn out yet, but beans. And the areas where it's been really dry, the bean yields are probably as good as the areas where they caught rain. And the question mark is, how did that happen? Well, one, similar to last year, we had no ponding this year, and the same was true last year. Two, we've had cooler nights, 70 or under, and then dewy mornings. And that's exactly what we had last year. So the yields have come in pretty close to where we were a year ago. And also, like I say, the poor ground of, not necessarily poor ground, but the drier ground yielded just very comparable to those who were catching some showers.
And Alan Brugler, what are conditions like in Omaha, Nebraska? So you're there on the west end of Iowa, the east end of Nebraska.
Well, Omaha caught a couple of rains that the rest of the state didn't get, so we're a little closer to normal. I think year to date we're down about 6.5 inches of rain, so dry but not as dry. The D4 droughts are northwest of us, heading towards South Dakota, and the dryland areas out in western Nebraska are just in really disastrous shape. As far as yields, what I'm hearing out west, the dryland corn is only going 50 bushel an acre, and in some cases has been totally abandoned. The pivots are just slightly under their long-term averages. We did have some pivots that were damaged last spring because of high winds and so forth that weren't ever repaired due to part shortages. But what I am hearing is the irrigated yields on soybeans are excellent. I've heard some 95 to 100 bushel numbers occasionally. I don't think that's representative. Corn-wise, we're probably 170 to 175 for state average yield. Last year, we were in the 190s. So we've definitely taken a hit here. But there are some success stories here and there. And this is the kind of year where if you got a really good yield, you tend not to say much about it either.
Yeah, indeed. USDA, NASS, and the World Agricultural Outlook Board will take all the numbers that they've been collecting since the beginning of the month and put them into next Wednesday's USDA crop production and WASDE reports. Alan, do you expect yields to increase and other things to change based on the grain stocks numbers that came out at the end of September?
Well, they clearly have to cut the carry in the WASDE report because they already know what it is, right? They told us that on the 30th. They cut it by more than 100 million bushels. But I think there's a tendency when you tighten up that that beginning stocks number that you lose some demand. Okay, you end up doing a little more price rationing because scarcer supply. That's just the way USDA works it. So we're looking for the ending stocks to drop to between 1.1 and 1.2 billion bushels, but not down to a billion like a few folks have floated around out there. We think there is some definite rationing on the export side of things. Yield wise, you know, our Brugler 500 model would say we're down around 170, but that's still plus or minus three bushels at this point, standard deviation. So the trade average guess from Bloomberg today was 172.1. That'd be down 0.4 from last month. We're okay with that number, but we can see it go skew just a little bit lower too.
Sue, where do your numbers land?
Well, I would have to say, first off, in this report coming up, we have to keep in mind, I do agree, you know, we lost 150 million bushels of old crop stocks on the corn. And yes, there's quite a few that do seem to think the yield may improve in this report ahead of us. I don't think so. We've got to keep in mind the eastern corn belt was thought to be better all along and the western side not so much. And I think there's a lot of tip back out in the fields. And we have to keep in mind that for every bushel in yield that we see a change, it's equivalent to about 81 million bushels of production in this report coming up. So, you know, we've lost 150 of old crop. You know, I think that when we see the crop harvested, you know, we were only at 20% at the end of, what, the 2nd of October. So this report's as of October 1. So I'm not so sure the yield will change much. If it does, I agree, maybe a pittance lower. I'm just curious if it isn't going to end up even lower still. I think corn could be the crop that declines, and the bean crop is the crop that holds and gets better as we go from October and even from the September to October report and then from October into the final. The corn yield, the one thing about the corn, you know, we have to keep in mind ProFarmer really set the tone for what was expected on this crop. And then, you know, 168.1. And then you have Michael Cordner, who's a well-respected analyst of production, not only in the U.S., but in South America. And he's standing around 169, maybe a hair over. So I think if we were to get our way down towards 170, I think we've priced in the lower yields. And I think if we get down in towards that 172, or a little under in this report, I think the trade's already got it dialed in.
Dialed in enough that it won't move lower on that day?
Dialed in to where we won't have as much of an enthusiastic rally. In other words, if we rally, it'll fail, is probably what I'm thinking more.
All right. So I will come back to corn, but Alan, at the end of your points, as you were talking about what you hoped to take up today, you mentioned both biofuels and palm oil in the same sentence. And I think you really meant to do that as it relates to soybeans, renewable diesel, and going forward, what that might mean for the marketplace. Or maybe I have misinterpreted you.
Well, I think it was a Freudian slip, but you can. Palm oil is interesting in itself. Of course, the Indonesians messed up the market when they tried to keep it at home for a couple of weeks to bring down domestic cooking oil prices. Then they ended up having to dump it on the world market because the palm bunches were rotting in the fields and in the factories. Doral Mistry, who's a pretty well-known palm oil analyst, still thinks that we'll see new lows for palm oil before the end of the year just because of that getting rid of that surplus production. But Indonesia is also using quite a bit of it for biodiesel. I think the story here, of course, is there's a number of initiatives for renewable biofuels, and there's some pretty fat tax incentives and startup money and so forth to expand that industry. The airlines are getting on board with SAF. And, so long term, you can see this green push, and the tightness of crude oil is going to do nothing but accelerate that, I think. The flip side is we've got a comfortable level of soybean stocks right now. And Brazil may have as much as 918 million bushels more next year than they did this year. That dwarfs anything we're going to do here on yield or production or consumption in 1 year time period. So I think the market's got this balancing act between, long term, we think we can use a lot more beans than we have, but short term, there's this potential wall of beans coming out of South America.
So if you could pick up on that point and continue to relate your thoughts on consumption for soybean and demand going forward.
Well, I think first off, we have to keep in mind that Mato Grosso is the largest producing state in Brazil. And their soybean production is going to be record large at 41.8 million metric tons. And yet South American premiums continue to firm. Thus far, there's indications that 99% of the soybeans being planted going in very good conditions. Biodiesel demand in Brazil is said to be so poor that storage tanks are full of soy oil, and then the margins are poor there. Then you look over at China, and you have China who's been in these consistent lockdowns and not being able to get their, running pace to be able to get factories going and what have you. And on October 16th, the Chinese will hold their 20th annual party congress to rule for the CCP. And it's expected, of course, that President Xi will be in for a third term, 5-year term as head of the country. I think once that is solidified, I think Xi is going to loosen his rein on the country as to how tight they have been trying to fight COVID, and they get back into working mode. And right now, the price of soy meal in China is record high because they have not been crushing, and crushing margins, of course, have become, poor, and because of all the lockdowns and not able to be working. So I think when we look at that, the demand pull is going to be so huge for crude oil, for soybean imports. And of course, we've seen, 60 cargoes, if not more, heading towards China or bought for China this fall out of Argentina, with the Argentine farmer still holding about 28% of his crop yet. And I think that the economy turns sort of similar to us in 2020-21, when we started to come out of our lockdowns and be loosened up and whatever. I kind of think theirs is going to just be on steroids, and the economy is going to just grow by leaps and bounds, and the demand for raw commodities is going to be huge.
Well, I've got a question about that, Alan Brugler, for you, and maybe Sue Martin, you'll want to answer this as well. Some work from the University of Illinois by Joanna Colusi, along with Gary Schnitke, that they presented during a webinar that you can find on the FarmDoc Daily website now in the archives. The last one, as it relates to Brazil production, shows that soybeans moving out of Brazil on transportation costs to China are roughly now the same because of the updates that have been made in Brazil. I'm wondering whether there are enough beans in Brazil and enough problems on the Mississippi River that what would be normally a good export market for soybeans from the United States, and I know part of this will go out of the rail, but you've got tough areas out west, could create a point at which Brazil is serving China soybeans at a time when the United States normally would be. Do you think that might be the case, or are you fearful of that being the case, Alan?
Well, the improvements in the infrastructure are well taken, particularly BR-163, the main highway going up to the Amazon River, being now two-lane hardtop instead of just mud. That makes a big difference. But what we've been anticipating would happen is the U.S. would have very strong exports this fall, Sepoc-Novdis, particularly Oc-Novdis, because Brazil had that small crop last year, 126 million tons because of the drought. Then sometime in Jan-Feb, as you start to see those new crop Brazilian beans available, that the number would drop off a cliff. We thought it's potentially that we'd see 82 to 85% of the U.S. exports for the year in the first 6 months, which we've done once or twice in the past, but that's very heavily front-end loaded. What has kind of changed that a little bit has been this peso holiday that Argentina had with the soy dollar. That broke loose some 4 or 5 million tons of Brazilian beans that, or excuse me, Argentine beans that we didn't think were going to be available in this Sepoc-Nov period, and China scarfed them up. They bought them. So that's taken a little steam out of our fourth quarter soybean export estimate. And again, where we reach that tipping point where they go to Brazilian in 2023 is going to be somewhat dependent on their crop size. If they really have a 151 million ton crop, then they'll be still shipping beans in October, November of 23. And that's later than they normally would be doing anything meaningful in the world market.
Anything else to add, Sue?
Well, I think he covered it very well. I would have to agree. I think that between the changes in marketing in Argentina, commingled with our weather concerns and the dryness causing such a record low level in the Mississippi, down to the Gulf, his basic lake, because we've got like over 1,600 barges backed up, I think that the combination of all of that has stolen our thunder for the Oc-Novdis timeframe of this year. And then with a good start so far in planting season in Brazil, you know, we could be looking at Brazil next year in that January, February, March period. Boy, they're going to be so vulnerable for the weather. And if the weather is ideal and congenial to them, one, they're getting a crop in early and on time thus far. That would imply even the Safrina corn going in timely. We could have a different complexion in the markets next year.
U.S. farmers are prone to move soybeans across the scale rather than to put them in the bin. I'm wondering whether there is any reason that they should not sell them across the scale as opposed to holding on until January and collecting maybe a carry sometime in the future. Sue, and then Alan, if you've got follow-up.
I kind of have to agree with that, Todd. I think that how do you not sell $14 beans off the combine when we had that chance? Now, because of the river, basis levels have dropped a dollar. And so, you know, the basis isn't what it was. Still, so you're instead of $14 beans, you're maybe around an upper 12 or something like that. So the basis has caved, and you've got end users or processors of beans taking some downtime at this time. And so it just feels like the atmosphere isn't really laid out as nice as we would normally have expected it, contrary to a year ago. So yes, I think farmers, if they took advantage of those basis levels, they would be marketing those beans off the combine. There'll be others that maybe will market as well, but just because they don't tend to store. But then you get to the corn crop and it's a whole different story.
Sue hit a key point there, which is the basis has really dropped here. You know, with this the slower exports and the high barge freight, we've weakened that basis bid quite a bit going up river. The processors aren't having to bid as aggressively to get the beans right now. They have excellent crush margins. The board crush margins are phenomenal, but they don't have to bid for them. So the argument against selling at harvest is your basis is not as good. It's not bad historically speaking yet, but it's nowhere near what it had been. So you might be wanting to try and structure it that you can pick up a little post-harvest improvement, or if we get some rain and the river levels go up a little bit, that might help improve it by taking some of the freight costs out. The other argument for keeping some beans back, you know, 20% gambling stocks or whatever, is simply we're very complacent about that South American crop and the weather right now. Okay, we're assuming trend line yield. Those 151 numbers for Brazil and the equivalent numbers for Argentina are just based on trend line yield. They're not record yield. But we are very complacent that as of right now, there's no weather problem. If that suddenly develops in December or whenever, then you might get a better opportunity than $13 board.
Tell me, Sue, about the global marketplace for corn and what it, and how it sets up as it relates to, of course, the wider feed grains marketplace across the planet. Australia had a good wheat crop. A lot of rain there. They may not have a great wheat crop anymore. We'll see how that turns out. I'm just thinking about all of those things combined.
Well, I think, again, I go back to China. And I think that China is going to be needing corn. I think there'll be a good appetite for U.S. corn or even Brazilian corn. I also think that when I look at the demand for ethanol usage, now there we see a little better demand for corn. Ethanol processors, even out in Nebraska, you had some huge premiums coming into the fall, into harvest. You know, there was some ethanol facilities offering, you know, 60 cents, 40, 60 cents over the board through all of October. And you had some that were offering you even a better premium, maybe $1.20 over, depending on where you were going with it, even through till almost December. So I think after the report came out here, the quarterly stocks, I think the end user who was a little nervous, be knowing full well that the bin space is empty and that we're fairly abundant in ability to store stuff, that the farmer would move grain into the bins. And they feared that because they know that if that gets in the bins, it's not coming out until they get further into next year and it's bid out. I think that you've looked at Kansas and the dryness and the feedlot need for corn is going to be pulling out of the Iowa, probably even what they can get if the yields are decent enough for irrigated. Maybe they'll be pulling out of Nebraska, but I think that when we look at this crop, I think the demand's going to be very good going forward for corn. The key will be the Safrinha corn getting planted on time. And again, I go back to South America. This is a year, you know, they've had, 2 years of adverse weather, one on the Safrinha corn and then one on the beans. This is a year that we're going to be watching their weather very closely because if it's ideal, it's going to certainly weigh on the grain markets.
Alan Brugler, your thoughts about the corn market?
Well, there's definitely a huge disparity in basis west to east. You know, we're seeing a lot of cash bids over $8 in Colorado, western Nebraska, and on down into Kansas, Oklahoma, and Texas. It is going to interfere with grain flows. You're going to have to see trains coming out of South Dakota or Iowa to Texas, probably going past all those ethanol plants, and that's why they're bidding so aggressively. I even heard 82 cents over these for February delivery from an ethanol plant. So they're trying to lock it up out front quite a ways. The thing we have to remember is the export program is terrible right now for corn. We're over 12 million tons below a year ago on bookings right now. China's nibbling, you know, part of a cargo here and there. But they don't have very much on the books as opposed to last year. That I'm not quite as optimistic as Sue that they're going to come in for some, given the geopolitical concerns with Taiwan and Ukraine and Russia and so forth. But the domestic users, whether they're feedlots or ethanol plants in the West, are trying to lock as much up as possible before the rail market or the export market wants it. In the East, it's a little different matter. The basis has dropped off. It's more subject to that high barge rate on the Mississippi. Little different scenario there. But, you know, the reality is, hey, we're pushing $6.50 here. The board has had great difficulty getting over $7 here. You've seen Dease corn stall out in the low 690s three times now, I believe. So there's a lid on it for now. Whether that's just a harvest function or if it's more permanent, we don't know yet.
Sue, is it a harvest function? Is there a place for the corn to go above $7?
Well, I think it is to a degree a harvest function, but then you look at next year's contracts for new crop, and you know, again, it's going to be interesting to see what our weather holds for us. I think that. I would have to say I'd call it more of a harvest function right now.
Are you hopeful for $7 and above then?
I think so, but then the next thing's going to be, as we get into next year, I go back to that export market and what Brazil has to offer. Remember, last year when we were fairly robust in corn, our highs came in May, on May 12th, when the key pollination time frame was expected for the delayed planted safrina corn. And so I think that this year's, it just feels like we've got a different slope or a different tilt on that weather. And I just worry about, you know, normally a year ending in a 3 is pretty good, normally. But this next year, I think, is going to be a very choppy, volatile ebb and flow. And then the other thing is, we don't know what happens with wheat prices. How does that pull corn? Because, you know, right now I'd bet on Putin as a more bull tender for wheat as opposed to a bear tender. And I also think wheat's not going to be viable as a feed alternative. So therefore, that puts more demand back towards corn. But I also think that we don't know what this world landscape is going to be like as we go forward, and Putin's really quiet right now.
Anything that we haven't covered that either of you want to make sure that we cover? Alan, I'll start with you.
Well, I'll just throw a couple of themes out that I've been using. There's a saying of short crop, long tail, okay, that you run up prices on a short crop, then you attract production and kill off demand, and then the long tail is it takes multiple years coming down off that high before you can get another big rally going. So that's our default mode here, is that we're beginning the tail. You can think of it a different way. You can think of it as fighting gravity. Okay, the market's going to be dragged down over time by increased production unless we get some more fuel for the rocket. Okay, the problem in South America, a big Chinese buy program, Russia does something to really screw up the grain trade. I mean, there's several things that could occur there, but I think that's the perspective you have to have, is over time that things go down unless we get those bullish incidents. The other thing that I'm stressing to my producer customers is that we are still in a high inflation environment. We have to be very careful about margin compression here. If you're paying up for that land, that fertilizer or the seed and so forth, you don't want to have your selling price go down and squeeze your margin. Conversely, you don't want to lock in a bunch of your four contracts for 23 when you don't have your input cost corralled, because there's a danger of another pop in them, and you get squeezed going that way. So I'm encouraging people to, you know, look at those balance sheets pretty hard, make sure you know what that margin is, and try and pace some sales to go with your exposure on the input cost side.
Sue, anything we haven't covered you want to talk about?
Well, the only thing I would say, kind of adding to what Alan just said, is that I, too, am a little concerned for this next year because of the high input costs that we have. But the other situation is that you don't want to lock your prices in too soon. I think if this is a time where a person looks at a producer looks at the options and really looks at put strategies, something that they can floor underneath them but leave that top side open, because there is several little dominoes that could still fall and take these markets higher. You know, say you get an explosive wheat market. Is corn going to go down against that? Probably not.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists today, including Sue Martin of Ag and Investment Services from Clarion, Iowa, and Alan Brugler of Brugler Marketing and Management in Omaha, Nebraska. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.